Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Cosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use. No Doubt continues now. This is the broadcast for May 3rd in the year of our Lord, 2016. It's hour 2 at 2. The goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio. We believe in the checks and balances put in place by the founders, brilliant, and the solution to the problems we face. We also believe the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America is the answer. We don't need a revolution, but a restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth is absolutely in order. Quickly, before we get to our guest, Pete wanted to chime in. Hi, Pete.
Hello there. Were asking who would be my pick for president.
Sure.
Vice president. And I would say who I always liked, Pat Buchanan for president, and Cynthia McKinney, congresswoman from Georgia, for vice president. Or she could be Secretary of State, and Babe Buchanan, his sister's pretty sharp. Otherwise, I can't think of anybody else that has any brains.
All right. Donald Trump said he might consider good old Cruz for the Supreme Court. What do you say to that?
Oh my goodness. The guy's name isn't even Ted. I don't even know where they came up with Ted. Do you? I mean, Raphael Edward. Ted is kind of a stretch. Wouldn't you say?
Well, it sounds more American if you name Ted, buddy. Come on.
When born, you lay. Hey, Canada. You bet. Water's crab.
All right. Hey, thanks, Pete.
You bet.
There he goes. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know who the best person to be president would be. I currently support the Constitution Party ticket, which is Darrell Castle for president and Scott Bradley for vice president. ConstitutionParty.com to learn more. I know they don't have a prayer to win, but they certainly can put together an incredible educational campaign about the proper role of limited government. All right, Patrick Simmons with us, righttowork.org. Welcome back to Liberty Roundtable, sir.
Thanks, Sam. Good to be back.
Let me ask you a question. I know you don't really promote who you think would be president or who you want for president because your organization doesn't do that, but you might have some input in some of this. You know what? Newt Gingrich is now begging Donald Trump to make him his VP pick. Would Newt Gingrich be fair to Right to Work?
I would have some concerns about Newt Gingrich on his track record.
They basically try to, in some of these articles, they try to say what in common Trump and Gingrich have in their, you know, the article's like, they both had three wives. Like, wow. That's someone you can count on to keep commitments, huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say, you know, in the 90s, when Gingrich got in to power and was Speaker of the House, he was basically an obstacle to getting a vote on the National Right to Work Act. That's his track record on our issue. It's basically, you know, no,
right.
I'm running things now. I know what votes we're going to have and not have. And it doesn't matter what we campaigned on. This is not part of what I want to get done. That's basically what he has done in the past on Right to Work.
Bait and switch, Mr. Getting Rich is kind of the idea.
Yeah. So that was disappointing, obviously. Trump has a very, we send out, the National Right to Work Committee sends out candidate surveys to everyone, asking them where they stand on forced unionism. Donald Trump returned his 100%, so at least there's that. I mean, he obviously, Ted Cruz did as well. John Kasich has not, he refuses to, but in terms of who's left on the Republican side anyway. You've got Trump and Cruz who have returned 100% in favor of worker freedom. Ted Cruz is a co-sponsor of the National Right to Work Act. Obviously, Donald Trump doesn't have any history.
But he hasn't had the chance either, so you can't hold that against him necessarily.
Right.
What about a Pat Buchanan? You know, would he be a Right to Work guy?
I don't know. I really shouldn't say because I'm not.
He's been a commentator for so long, it's hard to.
He's talked about, certainly, Right to Work. I think he said some favorable things. I don't know. I don't know what his actual.
My guess is he would be favorable because he does believe in America. He does believe in freedom to choose when it comes to work. It's interesting. The pro-choice folks aren't pro-choice when it comes to work, huh?
Yeah, well, of course, you know, they like to make, you know, when it's labor unions who fund all their, you know, left-wing kind of politics, you know, they of course are in favor of forcing people to pay into that.
Oftentimes during election cycles, Patrick Simmons, righttowork.org, it's a very tenuous time. And what do I mean by that is, well, everybody's so focused on the elections. Everybody's focused so much on the fanfare and the running around the country and campaigning and everything else that it's hard to keep an eye on the ball of what's really happening behind the scenes. Is this such a time for Right to Work?
Yeah, very much. I think, you know, as much as everyone focuses on politics now, in many regards, we're in one of the most dangerous periods in the Obama administration because, you know, not only is he not accountable to voters ever again, but he's, you know, people are paying attention to the presidential race and everything else, and there's not as much scrutiny on the administration. You know, obviously, after card check failed to get through Congress in 2010, that's been pretty well blocked in Congress, and it's not going anywhere. And so what we've seen is the Obama administration's Department of Labor, National Labor Relations Board, has really pivoted and looked at what it can do through executive power and through, you know, executive branch power grabs. And so we're seeing a lot of things happening that are very bad for individual rights, for, you know, workers being able to have a choice when it comes to unionization and not being forced. And we're seeing all these rules coming through. I know we've talked in the past about the ambush election rule. That's a rule that lets unions decide exactly the timing of the election they want, and it happens within 2 weeks. And therefore, the you know, any workers who may not be sure about having the union or the company, if they want to put out their side, they don't even have time to do so. And there's some other more technical ways that it basically rigs elections in favor of union officials. And there's been a whole lot of other things like that coming out of these executive branch agencies that we're seeing. And it is a dangerous time because of that. I think it's something people don't pay as close of attention to, especially in the election year, especially with this this election that the media loves to talk about, even if it's often sort of a very not detailed view of it, I guess you'd say.
What I find fascinating about it is it seems like it's a very dangerous time because what the Barack administration thinks is, you know what, just throw anything on the wall that we can get to stick behind the scenes when no one's a-watching. Let guys like Patrick Simmons and others at righttowork.org and the people supporting that fight it out in the courts later. If we throw 100 things on the wall, you know what, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever might stick. Isn't that kind of their approach right now?
I think that's absolutely their approach. Certainly on our issue, on Right to Work and forced unionism, you know, whether it's the Department of Labor, they just passed this rule that basically makes it almost impossible for small businesses to have an attorney help them when they have a unionization drive at their facility. And so the result of that is, of course, it really ties the hands of an employer who generally doesn't want a union and empowers union organizers to get in there. And we take that with the National Labor Relations Board and everything else. And a lot of these things will get struck down in court eventually, but not all of them. And, you know, this is the payback. I mean, before Barack Obama was even elected, in his book, he said, you know, I owe those unions. I don't see it as a problem or corrupting or whatever. When they call, I'm going to call them back. I mean, that's a rough paraphrase, but basically that's what he wrote in his book. And you look at his whole 8-year tenure, that's what we're seeing. And now at the end, when, you know, basically the only thing he can do is push things through the executive branch, we're seeing more and more of that.
Would it be accurate to say the Barack administration is going for broke against Right to Work?
I definitely think so, and we're seeing attacks by both the administration and by unions in new ways that are very dangerous, very scary. Up in Wisconsin, we just had a judge. This is in Dane County, very liberal county. The judges are elected there. Unions dominate the politics, but the judge, who is sort of a lame duck himself. He's stepping down. He's announced he's retiring, I think, at the end of the year. He struck down Wisconsin's right-to-work law, and the grounds that he did it on are really outrageous. We don't think they're gonna hold up, and eventually the state Supreme Court of Wisconsin is going to overturn him. But he's making this argument that there's a takings clause violation to a right-to-work law, and saying that unions have not only the right to force workers to pay dues, but that that's an obligation, that basically there's a constitutional right to have that money, which is really outrageous.
Let's talk about it more in a second with Patrick Simmons, righttowork.org on your radio.
This is Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and I want to introduce you to Numana Storable Foods. This is the first brand of storable foods that I am willing to put my name behind. It's food you can trust. No GMOs, no MSG, no chemical preservatives, and no fake meat. Plus, Numana doesn't just make that claim. They back it up with independent evaluation and testing. Another thing that Numana really does that excites me is the delicious vegetarian options. If your standards are as high as mine, I can confidently tell you that Numana Storable Foods are the quality choice that you've been waiting for. Numana won't just meet your expectations, they will exceed them. And that's why we're thrilled to have the good guys from Numana joining the Power Hour family. Go to powerprepper.com and learn about Numana Storable Foods. You can also call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Numana, the storable food you'll love to eat.
We fought, we learned, we struggled.
We won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Has your dancing and romancing done gone away? Are you moaning and a-groaning from the stresses of the day? Are you reeling and appealing because a headache's on the way? Well, relax for just a moment. Stress relief is on the way. Of what am I speaking, you ask? The essential oils of long historic use, the wisdom of the ages, the health care of the ancients, frankincense, myrrh, hyssop, and hundreds of others too numerous to mention. What could be more appealing? Do you know that Young Living essential oils is an element of life that makes them extremely effective in body rejuvenation? This element is called vibration, and it works with body systems, not against them. The professionals at Divine Living Oils have tested and been so impressed with this product that we are using them to help others. And who are we? We are health professionals with many years' experience. Trust us, we have seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. Our motto? Because we care about you. Do your health and spirit a great favor. Call us at 304-542-4226. That's 304-542-4226. Again, that's 304-542-4226.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
Back with you live, Patrick Simmons, righttowork.org, riding shotgun. We're talking about the Barack Obama administration literally going for broke against our rights and our right to work. Throwing everything against us to see what'll happen. Everybody else running around in elections and electioneering and campaigning and talking about it and rallies and all kinds of arguments and fights and protesters, and nobody's keeping an eye on the ball as far as I can tell back at the ranch, so to speak. It's just crazy. But you've got a situation now where, you know what, they're even starting to say it's like a God-given right of unions to take our money. Patrick?
Yeah, this is
crazy.
The takings clause, which is there's an equivalent in the Wisconsin Constitution, but in our U.S. Constitution, it says the government can't take private property without just compensation. And, you know, that's supposed to protect, you know, if the government wants to use eminent domain. Of course, in the Kelo decision, we learned that that's, you know, oftentimes a meaningless check on government power. But that's what it's supposed to protect. You know, the government can't just say, hey, we're taking this and, you know, you're out of luck and it doesn't matter. And so what the unions are doing is they're saying, hey, well, you know, this government power that you give us, this monopoly representation, the ability to force workers who don't want to be part of the union under union representation, well, because you say once we force them under representation, we can't then, you know, discriminate against them. We have to treat them all equally. Therefore, we're being forced to represent them, and that's taking our property. This is their argument, that the representation that they're giving these people who never wanted it, don't ask for it, would prefer not to have it, that's a government mandate somehow on them, and therefore they have to be compensated with forced dues. It's a outlandish argument. It's extreme. There's no support for it in Takings Clause, Fifth Amendment jurisprudence. It doesn't make any sense. This is a choice the union made to represent them all, and if anything, the takings is from the workers who are being forced to have their money go to a union they don't want. But anyway, that's what happened.
And this is where right to work becomes so valuable, because most people don't even realize this is happening. First thing to do is you know what, sound the alarm bell and let people know, wait a minute, whoa, they're jettisoning all case precedent here. They're jettisoning all common sense, all natural law, all God-given inalienable rights, and manipulating this with some kind of a quasi-government slash union slash, I don't know what you call it, new entity of corruption and tyranny. This is something where we got to sound the alarm bell that it's happening, number one, and then number two, do something to stop them.
Well, right, and that's what we're doing next. And so we did argue in that case in front of that judge. We didn't really have much hopes, because this is a very, liberal left-wing judge. We do think in Wisconsin that the Supreme Court there, which upheld Act 10, which were the reforms Scott Walker did up there, that they're going to uphold the right to work law. There's really no question. They're not going to buy this crazy argument. But where the real danger comes in is the unions have already taken this case, and they filed the same case, basically the same argument, out in Idaho, challenging Idaho's right to work law. And they did that in federal court. And what that means is that they are going to end up in the Ninth Circuit Appeals Court, which is by far the most sort of left-wing partisan of the federal court of appeals in the whole country. They're based out of San Francisco, I think someone described them to me as hippies in robes. Just to give you an idea.
It reminds me of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender lobby. They basically sued everywhere, knowing that one or two or three will stick, and that'll be their foot in the door.
Right, and the Ninth Circuit is, you know, that's the circuit that has historically been, the Supreme Court has overturned the most, and a number of our Supreme Court wins come out of the Ninth Circuit because we get a bad decision from the appeals court, and then the Supreme Court says, well, we're going to take this case and ultimately overturn them. But of course, with the Ninth Circuit being the makeup of the Ninth Circuit, and then with the Supreme Court in doubt, it shows that, you know, what really is a ridiculous argument that, you know, not only are, I mean, just, you know, earlier this year we were talking about how forced dues violate the First Amendment rights of workers being forced to pay them. You've now got union officials, union lawyers arguing in court that forced dues aren't just something that are acceptable under the law, but that they're actually mandatory, that they're mandated by the U.S. Constitution, which is
really, they're trying to kind of make you believe it's like an unalienable right of unions.
It's exactly what they're suggesting, that this the Fifth Amendment mandates forced dues. That's a crazy argument, but with the Ninth Circuit and with the partisan makeup of the Supreme Court and the potential for whether it's Barack Obama's nominee getting through in the lame duck or a Hillary Clinton nominee, it's a real danger at this point, and it's it's not something that we can just count on getting shut down because it's outrageous, because unfortunately our courts are increasingly getting politicized. Certainly the Obama administration and all the appointees he's had over the last 7.5 years have really been part of that.
All right. What other cases, what other things should we kind of be keeping our eye on, Patrick?
Well, the Friedrichs case, which was the case that the Supreme Court heard in January, and that was a case that would have ruled, we think, if Justice Scalia hadn't died. Everyone assumed, and people who watched the arguments, experts, people on both sides of the aisle, assumed that the Supreme Court was going to strike down forced dues as a violation of the First Amendment, 5-4. Then it ended up being 4-4, obviously. After Scalia died, they're deadlocked 4-4, which would let the Ninth Circuit, once again, their decision stand. The petitioners and the teachers challenging forced dues, California teachers, challenging that and saying our First Amendment rights are being violated. Everything the union does is political. Therefore, we're being forced to fund the political activity of an organization we disagree with. They petitioned for the Supreme Court to rehear that case and said, you should rehear it when you get a ninth justice.
You know what I find fascinating about this? It's almost as if I'm not saying they knew he was going to die. I'm not running around conspiracies saying anybody killed him. I'm just saying it's interesting to me how the Republicans complain about who Barack Obama picks. But they forget, yes, there's consent by the Senate, but there's also advice. So, you know what, why doesn't the Senate come out and say, listen, with our advice, we're advising you that you ought to pick from this candidate list. We could get somebody appointed quickly. I think the Democrats almost want to make sure no one is appointed. They act like they're against the Republicans withholding that. But I think the truth is they love it for that very reason.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that the Merrick Garland, who is the D.C. Circuit judge who Obama selected, and who the Senate has so far kept their word when they said we're gonna block this, and we're not even getting to the merits of this judge. We're just blocking it because we've got an election, and this is not the time to be choosing it. We should let the next president.
But on their advice, advice seems to me that I would produce a list for the president and say, listen, you can pick your list too, and ask to appoint somebody. But you got to have our advice, and our advice is not to consider that guy. Here's the list of people that we're willing to consider. The Congress could, or the Senate could do that too, couldn't they? They ought to.
Yeah, I think that would be a positive step for sure.
Well, it would show that they're not just trying to withhold; that they're actually trying to find a real solution. But it's got to be within the parameters that make sense from a jurisprudence point of view. But it seems to me that the Senate right now is taking a beating because they're just no. But if they created a list that Barack could pick from, and here's our advice part. We're giving you the advice that you really need to pick somebody that's not left of center, somebody that truly understands the court. Anyway, just my thought. Patrick Simmons, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Good to be with you again.
All right. There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. RightToWork.org. Get involved today. They're really watching some things behind the scenes that we got to keep an eye on. I'm telling you that right now. Quick pause. Sam and Kurt in seconds. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live on your favorite news the networks refuse to use, Talk Station.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With news this hour from LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg. The ceasefire that never was has been formally abandoned and all sides are fully engaged in the fighting again. The big news this week blames Syria for bombing a hospital in Aleppo, which the Western media claims killed 14 people, including 3 doctors. The Syrian opposition claims, without evidence, that Russian airplanes may have been involved. Joel Skousen is skeptical for a couple of technical reasons. Read them in this week's brief by signing up at worldaffairsbrief.com. Russia's TASS news service reports that tests are underway on a tactical electromagnetic combat system capable of protecting troops and civilian facilities from air and space attacks. Developed by Radio Electronic Technologies Concern, Russia's leading producer of electronic warfare systems, the system reportedly consists of multiple jamming modules exercising long-range impact on enemy command systems, according to RT News. For decades, Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe has been a personal friend and political ally to Bill and Hillary Clinton. His recent executive order restoring voting privileges to 200,000 convicted felons was widely seen as a favor to Hillary, even though he insisted that it was intended to redress racial inequities in the criminal justice system. His action was not only unprecedented, but under the state constitution, illegal. The New York Times said that the executive order effectively overturns a Civil War era provision in the state's constitution, something that can only be legitimately done through an amendment rather than by gubernatorial decree. Reacting to criticism from Virginia Republicans about this potentially impeachable election year ploy, Governor McAuliffe declared, quote, "Quit complaining and go out and earn these folks' right to vote for you." After a test of Flint, Michigan's water supply revealed lead levels up to 10 times the accepted limit, an official from the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, or MDEQ, ordered investigators to bump out the high result so that the department wouldn't be required to notify residents of the danger. This incriminating instruction is found in a recently disclosed 2008 email from Adam Rosenthal of the MDEQ's drinking water office to others in the agency. Rosenthal suggested that testers collect a minimum of 5 more samples in order to bring down the average. Virginia Tech professor Mark Edwards, who helped uncover the toxic water disaster in Flint, told the Guardian of London that, quote, "I've never heard it more in black and white." In previously published emails, it was a little bit implied, Edwards continues, but this is like telling the strategy, which is, you failed, but if you go out and get a whole bunch more samples that are low, then you can game it lower. If you want a win-win-win opportunity for patriots, think GiveMeLibertyFund.com. For LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
Do you want incredible commentary on a troubled world in your inbox every Friday? Check out worldaffairsbrief.com, will you please? worldaffairsbrief.com. All right, Kurt, I mentioned this earlier when we were talking to Patrick Simmons about possible Cruz for the Supreme Court pick. What do you say?
Well, it looks like Harry Reid's quite concerned about it, Sam.
Poor Harry.
And we don't want to upset Harry. I mean, certainly.
We don't? But the headline, I was kind of thinking we did. I was thinking we just take delight in upsetting Harry.
Yeah, good point. That's pretty much where I roll. But, yeah, the headline from the WorldNet Daily Boys is that, hey, maybe, Trump would consider Cruz. Now, he had this to say when speaking to the Daily Mail in an interview. He says, "I don't know if Cruz's temperament may not be ideal for the job." He says, "I don't know." He said, "I'd have to think about it. That's a big decision. There's a whole question of uniting, and there's a whole question as to temperament, and I'd have to think about it." But in a little later in the story, they mentioned Harry Reid, and his big concern is a guy like Mike Lee from Utah or Ted Cruz. He says, what he said was, "Try that one on. If that doesn't scare you, there's nothing that I could say that would scare you." Yeah, I don't know. Didn't scare me a lot, Mr. Harry Reid. But anyway, there you go.
Well, what do you think about a Mike Lee for that replacement? I think Mike Lee would be pretty good, Kurt.
Yeah, I think so. Of course, then what would we get then? Utah, maybe Bennett again? I don't know, But anyway, who knows?
What about you, Kurt?
Me what?
Huh?
I'd say Scott Bradley.
What about Kurt Crosby to replace Mike Lee? Come on.
Yeah, well, there you go. I'd say Scott Bradley, if he doesn't get to be a vice presidential candidate, serve as vice president, he'd be a great senator.
Do you think that Mike Lee, why didn't they ask Trump about Mike Lee? I mean, I don't know how you can say he doesn't got the disposition to deal with it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Mike Lee's
maybe.
Agree or disagree with Mike Lee on a couple of points, maybe, but you know what? He's pretty well-reasoned, well-delivered guy, if you ask me.
It's a great point.
So,
yeah, I agree.
I'm kind of saying Mike Lee ought to be Ida Scalia replacement, personally. But this is my problem with the Senate, though, Kurt. They're just running around, no, we're not going to talk about anybody. We're not going to replace anybody. We're going to wait for the next president. We're going to. They don't have any authority or right to do that. But the advice and consent, you know, they say, well, we're going to hold you up. You can't appoint unless we consent. But yet, what about the advice part, Kurt? If I was the leader of the Senate, I would basically come back and say, look, we're going to advise you in the advice section of this thing to pick from this list. You got Cruz, you got Lee, you got, and I don't even know all the people. I haven't researched it in depth enough, but here's the people that we think that you ought to really consider. Mm-hmm. Barack. Yeah. And then they wouldn't just be the no guys. This is one of the things that the Republicans just don't seem to get, Kurt. They're always the no guys. They don't ever have solutions of their own. Barack's already picked somebody and put them forth for, you know, hopeful consent and appointment.
Yep.
They're just going, no, we're not talking about that. And then you hear over and over, oh, man, the Republicans are caving. They're talking about it. But why don't they come up with their own list so that we can, one, see who they would pick? Number two, it would really, if they had done it early enough, it would have, let's say that the Senate gives Barack a list. Here's five guys that we think, or five people that we think could be, you know, the Supreme Court replacement for Scalia. And then Barack picks somebody out of the five. All you got to do is go, you know what? We gave you our list of five that we're recommending. You're obviously rejecting our recommendations out of the get-go. Why don't you go back to the drawing table, Barry? Mm-hmm. Next. See, they're just so ignorant. They can control the arguments, Kurt, but they never do. And you almost wonder if it's on purpose.
Yep. Good point, Sam.
All right. Cops are in the news, Kurt. They're investigating kids, aren't they?
Well, yeah. This is an... you can tell that we got some real dangerous times, Sam. According to you can find this story at libertynewsdaily.com, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. But it's sourced from a Houston area ABC affiliate, I guess, or at least according to them. Since 2013, there have been 40 similar cases in which students were investigated for lunch line forgery. Now, you know, you hear
big
a lot
time
of forgery
here, Kurt. This is serious
stuff. But I never really thought about lunch line forgery. And in this case, here's what happened. A $2 bill was used, Sam. Now, this eighth grader, student Dennis.
Hold on a minute. You didn't say a $3 bill, Kurt. You said a $2 bill, right?
$2 bill. Yep. Yeah. And this article says,
hey, Kurt, I'm going to be redneck for a second. Amber legal.
Yeah, they are. But they should be recognizable to reasonably well-educated adults. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, I typically try to have $2 bills to give us change for when you buy raw honey. You know, same.
You want to know why?
Some people get pretty excited about it. Others look at it like, I don't know, maybe I better take a 5 and 1 or something like that.
Yeah, we need to investigate you for the use of that legal currency, sir.
You know, they and yet sometimes when you pay for one, it's like, oh boy, guess what I got? And I try to tell folks, you know, the different thing about a $2 bill is they're twice as expensive as a $1 bill. But anyway, in this case...
And by the way, mathematically, in the new math, people have a hard time figuring that out when Kurt says that. People are just like, what? Eh?
Good point. But anyway, this kid attempted to pay for lunch at this Houston area Krista McAuliffe Middle School with this $2 bill she got from her grandparent. By the way, Sam, the note, you know, this $2 bill, and it said, they don't say this in the story, but I'll bet you it said United States note because it was issued in 1953. And this $2 bill was confiscated by school officials who apparently thought it was fake.
Did they even give the kid lunch, Kurt?
There's no mention of that. I think they probably held him in a lock cell or something like that. But police invested hours in the effort to confirm that the bill was issued in 53 was a legitimate item of currency. Also, by the way, Sam, I try to have those available in case people really want to, you know, go crazy and get some, you know, United States notes. The grandmother,
but you charge more than $2 for those suckers.
Well, yeah, I mean, most of the time we get three. The
Kurt rips people off and charges an extra dollar for them.
Sharon K. Joseph complained that there was no need for the police to get involved in the matter and that nobody had apologized to her granddaughter who was deprived of, well, there's your question, deprived of lunch, Sam. So,
anyway, see, I think somebody ought to sue now for starving the kids.
Forgery. Yeah, there you go. A good point.
Don't you think?
Now, one caller texts in, Sam, Patty texts in and says that I think we need to work on the state level. How about Scott Bradley as governor? Question mark.
You know what? I would support that completely.
Put him anywhere, you know.
I totally agree with that.
We need to clone him, you know, right?
Well, you could just put Kirk Cosby up there. You got to put Patty in the administration somewhere, too. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You guys can leave me as the media guy, you know.
Lieutenant governor or something.
All right. You run around using that legal currency. People ought to get busted for that. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's pretty
sweet. All right, ESPN's in the news, Kurt. They're not using fake currency.
Well, that's right. But here's what happened, Sam. One of their commentators, now that doesn't mean something you use for, you know, French fries, but it's a commentator. Guy's name is Kurt Schilling. And guess what he did, Sam? He did a social media post. You know, he works for, worked for ESPN.
Yeah, the past tense is used here, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, he did a social media post that it upset the gay rights lobby.
Ooh.
And so, you know, I guess that they were rebroadcasting a 2010 documentary that described a dramatic pitching performance during the 2004 American League Championship Series that featured this guy, Kurt Schilling. But ESPN just, you know, they kind of fixed history and they edited him right out of the deal. I guess during the, you know, the real life thing, if you were there in 2004, he pitched for the Boston Red Sox against their historic rival, the New York Yankees. He delivered 7 innings and allowed 1 run in the pivotal Game 6. By the way, his performance was all the more remarkable for the fact that he had suffered a torn tendon in his right ankle during the game. His sock became stained with blood. 17 minutes were excised. That means they, be the old case of he who owns the media makes the rules. They took it out of that documentary because, they didn't really like what Kurt Schilling said in his gay rights lobby, you know, where he offended those guys. That's how the freedom of speech works today, right, Sam?
Yes, sir. Tragic but true. The mainstream press needs to be challenged at every turn, ladies and gentlemen, and we do it every day on Liberty News Radio. Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211, and take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again, and, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Sam Bushman and Kurt Cosby back with you live. Man, there's so many news stories to talk about, Kurt. It's beyond imagination. It really is. But I guess there's gun grabbers in the news, huh?
Well, that's right. According to Liberty News Daily, the piece there, the headline reads, Support your local gun grabbers. Yeah, police in Glendale, Arizona. They've entered into what they call a memorandum of understanding with what's called the ATF, one of the beloved parts of the federal government, under which the federal government will fund the overtime costs of police officers that are tasked to enforce federal firearms policies. Now, the constitutional attorney, our buddy Joe Wolverton, he points out that this arrangement violates the reserved powers of state and local governments and the anti-commandeering doctrine under which the federal government cannot compel states to participate in enforcement of federal policies. You know, I think he might have even needed to mention the Sheriff Max case at the Supreme Court.
Well, Sheriff Max case certainly has Justice Scalia, former Supreme Court Justice and author of the, what's it called, decision? The majority ruling? Saying the same thing as Joe Wolverton.
Prince Mac, yeah, good point.
You know. Mm-hmm. All right, Fred Utah wants to chime in on Ted Cruz. Hi, Fred. You want to talk about Ted, huh, Fred?
Good morning. Well, last night, as usual, I go shopping late. I use the, you know, the wheelchair, so when the line is too much, I start reading. So I bought this, what's that called, National Enquirer. In the middle page, it's talking about Ted Cruz's father. And I was so amazed that he has been using, according to this undocumented, that he has been cheating on his taxes, collecting money for his ministries, but giving the address of his ministries his own personal apartment. So then I thought that to mention you, that's very interesting and very well documented. And
well, the problem that Ted's got is when you really dig into his father's past, his father fought on behalf of Castro too, right?
Yeah, that's also as mentioned there, and also he's saying that Ted Cruz was confronted by the Enquirer, but he did not mention no comment. It seems that, according to this paper, said that when he was signing his pictures for some of his fans, then simply he had been asked two times this question related, and he has not responded at all. And I told my wife, I think he knows that everybody has mobile nowadays, so he was afraid to make any comment. So I just want to bring your attention, because I don't have computer, but I'm sure that they are on their website also.
Yes, sir.
The title says running. It says, let me read the title. It says, Ted Cruz's tax cheat dad is running shady ministries. So, and in 2008, it seems that IRS has fined him, no, has put lien on his apartment for $16,000 plus.
Right.
That's all. That's all I want.
All right. Hey, thanks, Fred. Fred's right. The Inquirer did talk about it. I read a little bit about that. The bottom line is Ted Cruz has a serious bunch of problems that, you know what, when you dig into, you find. A lot of them relate to his father. A lot of them relate to his Canadian citizenship. A lot of them relate to, on one hand, he acts like he's this consummate outsider taking on the system at every turn. On the other hand, he cut his teeth in the Bush administration with hanging Chad, election fraud and results and everything else. On the other hand, he was involved with his wife who, you know, used to work for Goldman Sachs or whatever. They were involved in creating the North American Union. They were. I mean, you get so many issues to where you just say, man, Ted Cruz is just a problem. But it's kind of sad, Kurt, because when you talk to people about this, their eyes just glaze over. And I talk to conservative people that just can't even process what I'm saying.
Well, and the key thing is at least the standard prospects that they're giving us to vote for, all of them have skeletons, if you will, in the closet. You know, imagine if they promoted a guy like, Darrell Castle and Scott Bradley, if they brought them forward and let them really speak to the people, you know, and the people thought, hey, these people can win, they'd get some great backing, you know.
You're right about that reality, I think.
Yep.
I think for sure that's true.
But it's back to he who owns the media makes the rules, as you always taught us, Sam.
Yeah.
And sadly, we'll choose to, you know, either put them on or not put them on. And I don't think they'll put them on.
Sadly, there you go. And that's why we do our best in the media. If we just could get Americans to put real money behind us, I mean, $1 a day from 1 million Americans would get it done nicely.
Yes.
But anyway, the support your local gun grabbers, Liberty News Daily story, it's like crazy. We thought we'd beat back this gun control issue over and over and over and over, but it continues to just percolate, ready to strike at any second behind the scenes, doesn't it, Kurt?
Well, and it's always backed up by federal, you know, free money. I mean, I saw one story, I don't know if I sent it to you, but it was basically talking about how, you've got the guys in Venezuela running out of cash. And, I thought, it's interesting. They're talking about them running out of cash. Imagine the solution for them to, you know, basically institute honest money in Venezuela. And that would be the solution here in America as well. I mean, they talk about Puerto Rico running out of cash, basically going to have to declare bankruptcy. Hey, are they in a worse situation than our own U.S. government, $19 trillion or whatever in the hole? I mean, I would.
It's relative because we can rig the system and keep the con game going longer than they can.
Yeah, good point. I guess so. I guess we can.
But is there really a lot of difference? No, not really, sir.
I don't think so.
In fact, we're just worse off because we're bigger.
Yeah.
It's a tragic situation for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What else you got in the news, Kurt?
You know, I was going to ask you about the tech
ransomware
situation. The ransomware story is fine. The ransomware thing has been in the news, and I think I understand what this means, ransomware. It's where somehow some bad guy takes over your computer and grabs your stuff off it. And then hey, I'll give it back. And
let me stop you. They don't really grab it off there, Kurt. They actually just encrypt
it. Just makes it where you can't get it. Right?
Yeah, it puts a password on it so you can't access it. And to get the password, you got to pay them.
Okay. All right. So I guess that's basically it, huh? So what do you suggest for people to avoid this little problem?
Well, two things. One, never pay the ransom thugs.
All
because
right.
The only reason they do this is because people do pay them, Kurt. And if nobody paid them, they'd stop because there'd be no money in it. Okay, so I know that's hard to do after you've lost your data, but you got to just bite the bullet and deal with it. The best way you could prevent this, Kurt, is to take care of business in the first place. And what I mean by that is have updated virus protection, have updated malware, ransomware protection on your computers, but then also take off-site backups. What people don't understand is just because you back up with one of these online services, for example, Carbonite or whatever you're using, just so you know, if you don't catch the virus in time, Kurt, it'll just back up the virus copy right over your good copy.
There you go.
So you got a backup, but you got a bad backup now. Does that make sense? So the real only way to solve this is to take snapshot backups and store them off-site completely separate, creating a virtual wall between the two. And that's the only really way to prevent this stuff, to then to say, you know what, I'll just restore from my backup, and I'm not paying these people a penny. That's the best way to solve the problem, bar none. Is one, make sure that your systems are up to date, that you can ahead of time. Just think of it like this, Kurt. In the world of humans, if you don't have sex with anybody, period, if you're not married, and if you only have involvement with your spouse when you're married, who you're legally and lawfully married to, your likelihood of getting sexually transmitted diseases are almost zero. I mean, you could get them from a blood transfusion or something. I'm not saying, but I mean, they're virtually zero. The same thing's true with this. If you have online systems and stuff, they're likely to get compromised. The best thing you could do is protect yourself by installing the right software and equivalent to living life properly. And then the best thing you could do is take off-site backups that, you know what, are unrelated. And if all of a sudden a problem happens, your off-site backup, if it's recent enough, is your clear answer for solution. So there you have it.
There you go. Yeah.
Imagine I was kind of so succinct on that. That was shocking, huh, Kurt?
Yep. And along with that kind of, tech story, there's the headline reads, Tech Bubble Revisited. I don't know if you saw it, but, they're suggesting that maybe we're going to have the same kind of tech bubble burst that we had back in 2000. What I wanted to do was ask you what you see coming. I guess back then we had a 37% in the collapse on the NASDAQ in a 10-week period. That was a pretty big drop. I don't see it coming, but what do you say? Sure, it looks like, at least to me...
Kurt, somebody called trying to ask about their newspaper.
Their newspaper?
Yeah. My response to that would be get rid of your newspaper and go to libertynewsdaily.com would be my recommendation on that. Your recommendation on the stock thing, though, I'm just telling you, they're manipulating the markets. They love to boom and bust the economy over and over, Kurt. Every time they boom it, they make you feel wealthy. Every time they bust it, they take money off the table. It's part of their game to prop up the economy. The plunge protection team will let it not fail at this point. Time will tell where they're going to go. I think Joel Skousen's right. They're going to take us into war at some point to weasel their way out of it. In the meantime, they're going to keep the con game going, and you and I need to prepare every day above ground, every day safe, and every day that the economy doesn't crash is a good day to prepare, sir. That's my response.
Very good, Sam.
This nation shall endure. LibertyNewsRadio.com.